Hello and welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on today's programme. Well, actually, I haven't got a clue. You see, this week we're celebrating 500 episodes of The Urbanist, nearly a decade of putting together a podcast about city living, week after week. So join me as we find out together what our producers have planned for me. That's coming up right here on episode 500 of The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. Well, welcome to a very special edition of The Urbanist. We're celebrating 500 episodes of our show this week, and I've been told that all I need to do is be in studio this time and sit back for a few surprises. So to get us started, this is what's written here anyway, I'm now joined by The Urbanist's producer, Carlotta Rebello.
Hi, Andrew. It's nice to be on this side of the glass for a change.
Well, you've been here many times before, and I'm a little bit scared because many things could happen. You could just fill the show with all my bloopers and terrible mistakes over 500 episodes, but I hope there's more to it than that.
Oh, now you gave it all away. It's going to be just bloopers. No, Andrew, you know, welcome to your very own surprise show. I think, you know, it's really important to make it clear for listeners that you honestly have not got a clue about what's coming to you for the next few minutes. Apprehensive?
A little bit. And I'm just hoping there's a cake at the end. We'll see.
We'll see. All will be revealed. Well, believe it or not, over the past decade, you've broadcasted 338 hours of The Urbanist. That's a total of 20,280 minutes. And that's just looking at The Urbanist, not even, you know, our sister show, Tall Stories, if you want to add to that tally. Does it feel like you've done that many hours of the show?
Well, the strange thing is I remember the beginning of this like so clearly and being here when the show was a 1 hour special every week, and it was so many moving parts. You know, we refined it and made it a 30-minute show. But yeah, it's been incredible. What a ticket to go around the world, meet interesting people, spend lots of time on the road with yourself and with David too. And it's been a great team effort.
Well, you mentioned there the beginning of the programme, and that's exactly where I want to start our audio trip down memory lane. And what a better way to do that than looking back to the 20th of October 2011, the very, very first show. Well, let's start by just having a listen to what you introduced The Urbanist to the audience for the very first time, as it was. Let's have a listen.
And now, The Urbanist, the show about the cities we live in, with Monocle's editor, Andrew Tuck.
Welcome to episode one of The Urbanist. This is a show about city living and what makes it work and what makes it break. It's a show for the people who believe the countryside is best left to cattle and bugs, and to find being rammed up against all humanity a good thing.
Andrew, does that mission still hold true?
God, how earnest I sounded, didn't I? I found like some professor from the 1930s. I think it still does hold true. You know, we're in a very extraordinary moment for cities where many people are saying, look, it's not going to hold anymore. People are going to flee to the suburbs and beyond. But yeah, I still believe that, you know, that great things happen when we're rubbing shoulders with each other, when we're all in the same space. Ideas flow, things happen. So yeah, I still believe it. And I just need to warm up my act, didn't I, 10 years ago?
Well, that was indeed quite a listen, just to have that throwback. But I think we're missing someone here if we're going to talk about episode one. So let's cross over to Los Angeles now, and let's just see if you recognize this voice. Hello, Los Angeles.
Hello, London.
Hello, David Michaud. My God, I've just seen a view of you with very long hair, and you've switched cities. You've abandoned London for Los Angeles. How does that kind of take you as a switch of like city living?
Well, I think as Carlotta can attest to, this is like the antithesis of London. I escaped on February 1st in like the depths of grey London winter to delightfully sunny, warm Los Angeles, and I haven't looked back.
Well, we need to make
I say that now, and you know, obviously, the one silver lining of COVID here is, of course, much lighter traffic. So talk to me once it's all back in action.
And just to introduce David to the audience, that new listeners of the show, David Michon is the original producer of The Urbanist, started the program with Andrew nearly 10 years ago now. Guys, what was the grand vision for episode one? How stressful was it to put together?
Well, I think from my side, how lucky I was to have David there from day one, because, Yeah, I don't know. We were still plotting what the show should be. There was a lot of hustling to go on. Both David and me managed to sneak in a few interesting trips around the world. We managed to go with another former colleague to Latin America, to Brazil. So there were great, great things. But you know, we were all feeling our way. And David certainly moved into being a professional in this space as well. So I guess for both of us, a big learning curve. Hey, David?
I think as with the launch of Monocle 24 in general, you felt a sense of dread that you would run out of ideas like almost immediately. You know, we kind of like tapped everyone that we knew for the first few episodes. And then, you know, I was just totally oblivious to where things would head and how we would continue to find stories and ideas or whatever. It just felt like the metabolism was beyond us, but we did it, didn't we?
We did. And every now and then,
carrying the torch.
Every now and then it pops in my kind of world of social media. Yes, I do have some. The odd picture. And there was a picture the other day of us, me and David, standing on the banks of the Thames in the mud with our microphone. Pictures pop up from all around the world. So that Marantz went quite a few places.
Nearly falling in the Thames. We saw Claire Danes in Rabat.
That's right.
what else happened?
Well, while I have the two of you here, let me also introduce the next couple of guests. Guests that the two of you spoke to on episode one of The Urbanist. And let's cross over to Copenhagen first. Here to say hello to Andrew, we have the Danish architect and urban design pioneer, Jan Gehl. Hello, Jan. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. And I will say hello, Andrew, from Copenhagen. You can see I'm sitting in the middle of the Copenhagen harbor with my rubber boots on. You can see one of the many bicycle and pedestrian bridges, which is now bridging the harbor. I think that I would congratulate you for the work with this series, but also for the Monocle work in general. I think it's done a lot to boost the understanding of quality of cities all around the world. And I really think that there has been increasing tailwind on the bicycle lanes in the last 10 years. We have felt that the understanding of the what quality of city means for the quality of life has been really increasing. I can share with you just one example, which I think is quite funny. This book, which book, Life Between Buildings, this year, it is celebrating 50 years. The first version was made 50 years ago. It's come out 30 versions, and 15 of them are inside the last 10 years. So there's really very much evidence of that the interest for quality in cities is still increasing. And I think that work like the one you've done with Monocle has really pushed this.
Well, Jan, what's amazing is, you know, you were on that first show with me and David Michon, and the reason we wanted you on that first show is because you're one of those people who can articulate these ideas about cities in a way that everybody can connect to. Because the interesting thing is often this debate happens in a city hall or in a symposium. People feel a little bit removed from it. But what's happened over the last 10 years when we've had the fortune to make the show is, I guess everybody's just a bit more passionate about their cities and what they could be and what they should be. Do you find that that's changed for you? That, you know, as you're saying, so many more versions of your books, are you finding that people are just that much more engaged with the debate about what happens to our cities?
I definitely not only think, but I have much evidence that the whole mindset's changed, which has taken a long time to accelerate, but after year 2000, and especially in the last 10 years, we have seen the interest and the understanding accelerating. People are more and more realizing the challenge, the climate challenge, the sustainability challenge. Now, of course, all of us talk about COVID, but it is a climate challenge, which is a real challenge. We will forget COVID in 3 years' time, and then we'll certainly need to use the enthusiasm to address the climate issue worldwide. There is quite a bit of understanding around, and that is very comforting.
And yeah, and how great it has been to, you know, have you been part of the Urbanist journey from day one. And during this past year, we've had you on the show so many times and always a voice of reason for our cities. I want to ask you to stay with us because we have another fellow episode one guest. This time we're joined by Tim Finley, the founder and creative director of Applied Wayfinding, another person who joined us over the past year to talk about the impact COVID has had on our cities. And who knew? Tim, you've been a guest since day one.
Hi, Andrew. Good to be back. And I've got to be honest, I really didn't realise I was a guest on the first episode. You didn't tell me that. So,
Tim, it's the work that you do in getting people around cities, in responding to the times we live in or the places we're in has been amazing. And I think we spoke to you in that very first episode because David Michon had discovered that you'd worked on these maps for London that were on the street, that were wayfinding systems, encouraged people to perhaps walk a little bit more and rather than jump on public transport. But how perfect to have those in position during this past year. You, again, a bit like Jan, I guess you see many of the things that you've been talking about come to fruition in the last year as really serious things for cities to be engaged with.
It's amazing, isn't it, looking back 10 years, and you had some ideas back then, but now we know, for example, in London, that walking has increased by 5% in central London. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's billions of journeys. And, you know, it was decreasing before we did the project. So, you know, we've made some little impacts to some big numbers, or the other way around, whichever is the right way of putting it. But yeah, I think it's really interesting looking back. I think the other point I wanted to make, just a personal point, Andrew, I've got to say, you do some of the best introductions in the business. You seemingly do it without any prep. And whenever you've interviewed me, I've never had a clue what your next question is going to be. It's kind of frightening and exciting at the same time. So thank you. Well,
thank you. David Michon will tell you, I prepare for hours for these shows before I come on Carlotta too. No.
That's why it's nice that for this time around, we're the ones asking you the questions that you have no idea how to answer.
I haven't got a clue what's happening.
Well, Tim, Jan and David Michon, episode one and many more of The Urbanist couldn't have been done without any of you. So thank you so much for joining us on this little trip down memory lane for episode 500 of The Urbanist. Thank you very much. Well, Andrew, we have some dispatches coming up as well. And this time we're off to Madrid.
A very happy 500 episodes of The Urbanist, Andrew. Now, I actually owe my sudden radio career to The Urbanist. Back in 2011, when I was meant to join you on the sidelines of the World Architecture Festival in Barcelona and learn the radio ropes, in the end, you couldn't come, but you sent your Marantz recorder instead in your place. And I had a sort of baptism of fire, finding my own way and delivering a report that paved the road for many more adventures in the years since. I've profiled revolutionary markets, chatty, opinionated taxi drivers. I've showed why city bats should be allies instead of villains.
Monocle 24 listeners, urbanists, and horror hysterics, maybe it's time we all gave these misunderstood flying mammals a break and just let them go about their nocturnal business of fighting the real enemy.
And even did a report about the unlikely balance between shop owners and prostitutes on one of Madrid's most colourful streets. And this goes to the heart of what I love about this show, exploring how we share space, see each other, and live together. And it's been a very fun and informative ride, and here's to many more stories in the years to come.
And that was, of course, Liam Alders, Monocle's Madrid correspondent. Andrew, what did you make of Liam's words there? Do you remember dispatching a Marantz instead of yourself?
Yeah, I do. And yeah, Liam's one of those great reporters who can cover anything from you. Politics to food, I don't know, you can just send him out. He's got a way with people that's charismatic and people begin to tell him their stories. And I think also he's somebody who's a little bit of an outsider, originally Australian, living in Madrid. And often I find it's really interesting when we've used reporters who have a tiny bit of outside perspective. They see things afresh. And his take on Spain and on Madrid has been vital to Monocle, but certainly a really glorious thing to have here on The Urbanist.
Well, from one excellent correspondent to another, it's time now to say hello to our former Vienna correspondent, now based in Berlin, Kimberly Bradley.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Well, Kimberly, again, we've done lots of things across the years. And I think one of the more interesting stories you helped to set up was in Berlin, actually, when we came to do a walk through your old neighbourhood, seeing everything about the Jewish history there and the very painful history. But you were our way into that world. That led later to us doing an event in Berlin.
Yeah.
So all these little introductions you've made have been amazing.
Oh, thank you. No, that particular episode, I think it was an entire hour on Augeststrasse, which at one time was the main post-fall-of-the-wall art hub in the city, but also was smack in the historical Jewish neighborhood, so layer upon layer of history. But it was you and me and David Michon kind of traipsing up and down the street talking at length to people. And I learned even more than I knew then, had known before that episode at the end of that production. But it's true, we did events on that street later with Monocle.
You took us to that amazing dance house, the Bauhaus.
Bauhaus.
And there had been, you know, a place where many people in East Germany had gone to dance of an evening and have a beer. And here was this kind of crossover world of like a little bit hipster, but still this generation of old school dancers there as well.
It just got sold to Joram Roth, and everyone was terrified that it would get heavily renovated, but he's basically kept it the same. So Klärchen's Bauhaus is still around. But that street has changed a bit since then. And I don't live there anymore. So, yeah.
Well, Kim, another story that you've reported for us over the years and another place you don't live there anymore was when we did a show about going back to our hometowns. And you sent us this dispatch from a very cold town in northern Minnesota.
It's only moderately urban there, too. So it was funny that that landed on the urbanist. But Andrew, do you remember? It was a whole hour of hometown dispatches.
I remember.
And I am from Bemidji, Minnesota, which is 4 hours north of Minneapolis and 4 hours south of Winnipeg. And it's kind of just forest and lakes. But it is a growing regional hub. It's increased by 40%, actually only in the last 10 years in population. And it was absolutely wonderful to reconnect to the ice fishermen and to the indigenous population being recognized at last, and to actually economic growth. There's new medical centers there. There's a lot of business going in. And to really look at it from that point of view was absolutely fantastic. Because for a long time, I was a bit ashamed of coming from such backwards place.
And just quickly, because you've jumped between cities and, you know, Vienna is another place that's been home. Just quickly, why is Vienna so moody? That's another question you answered as well.
I think Vienna has, I mean, our Viennese correspondent does a little bit more radio than I did. And I never did talk to Alexei about this. And I remember getting a brief to discuss mood in cities. And I just sat down and I think I wrote that in about half an hour. There's a lot of contradiction in Vienna. And having come from so many years in Germany as an American, I noticed that the Viennese are a bit more jovial than Northern Europeans, but they're also quite a bit grumpier. So they have this broader spectrum, but they wave back and forth and are very proud of their heritage and history, but at the same time, a bit ashamed, I think, of having lost their great empire. So there's a lot of swinging back and forth.
Not at all. But again, it's this idea of the outsider seeing in. You're an American in Europe, being in Berlin, being in Vienna. And thank you so much for all the incredible things that you've delivered for The Urbanist as well.
Thank you very much, Kim. Now, we're going to swiftly move along our surprise expedition across the globe. But in the meantime, just a teaser of some of the things that happened behind the scenes while we're recording.
Let's just wing it again.
That best describes our episodes. That's a bit of an insight of what happens behind the scenes. Always a bit of a musical moment with us. Well, let's head over to Rome now, where we have our own David Pleasant joining us. Hello, David.
Hello, Andrew and Carlotta. Uh-huh. I'm not actually in Rome. I should disclose I've come back to London very recently. So I don't want to, I really don't want any fact checking going on to kind of call that one out. But I am generally in Rome, and congratulations, Andrew, on 10 years and this 500th episode.
Well, David, your connection with Monocle goes back just as long, if not more. And we've given you some good reports to go and do, including reporting on Rome's wild boars, and that's B-O-A-R-S, we should point out.
Yeah, not boars, maybe Viennese boars, as Kimberly was talking about there. Indeed, that was a fun one. So I went out to the north of the city, and it was one of the first reports I did when I moved there. This problem of the wild boar intruding on urban areas and causing havoc.
Well, you managed to survive. Yeah, you managed to survive that. I think we have a little clip, actually, of you in action chasing down the piglets.
The next resident I come across, a doctor standing outside her surgery, seems to have a more relaxed approach to the area's bristled visitors.
Of course, I've seen one. He's called Giorgio. My patients started calling him Giorgio, so now that's his name. How big is he? Yes, he's big. He's like a big dog with long black hair. If you go down the road and at the first residential complex you get to...
So, David, do you think that Giorgio actually ended up on a plate, or do you think he's still roaming through the woods?
I think a plate is probably quite realistic, actually, Andrew, because they did put in a policy of shooting the boar and butchering them as well.
Now, we did send you to do some quite serious dispatches, and you went to meet the mayor of Reykjavik and you did an amazing report on there. And you've always been great at bringing together also the architectural aspect in these reports. But I do remember that we also sent you to the French House, which is a famous pub in Soho. When I say sent, I'm sure you were just there and you got your microphone out. Tell us about the significance of the French House and why it merited being on The Urbanist. I can't remember the pitch.
Well, funny you should mention the French House, because actually Carlotta was kind enough to remind me of this. And you might not be surprised, but I literally could not remember that report at all. And that might be because I enjoyed it a little bit too much. But anyway, I listened to it again. I had no recollection whatsoever. It was like amnesia. But the fact is, it was in 2014. And a very jovially themed urbanist episode was called Drinking in the Cities. And I went along to the French House that was not only celebrating its 100th anniversary, but it was also the 25th anniversary of the landlady there, who was called Leslie Lewis. I'm not sure if she's still the landlady. She told me a little bit about this kind of establishment, this kind of legendary place that had some kind of quite peculiar kind of rules for punters, including quite famously, you're not allowed to use your mobile phone in there, which was quite kind of avant-garde and I think quite progressive in many ways, sort of pre-digital detox policy from the French House.
Well, David, great to have you on the show. And thank you so much for all your help across the years. And it's nice to know that you're using your roaming details as well to actually roam away from Rome and be back in London for a little while. So let's connect maybe French House or somewhere else over the coming weeks.
That would be lovely. Thanks so much, Andrew.
It would be lovely to go for part two of that report, if I must say so myself.
Let's do it.
Well, let's continue with dispatches from some of the contributors over the years here on The Urbanist. First, we have Monocle's Lucinda Elliott.
It is The Urbanist that's been the unexpected window from where I've taken a good look out over the different South American city skylines I've settled in. I filed my first report to Andrew from chaotic Caracas back in early 2017, then moving to Brazil ahead of what would be a landmark presidential election. I cast my curious and at times puzzled gaze over the locals, dialing from ear-shaped telephone boxes, staying loyal to bookshops, and using girls-only ride-hailing apps or ancient trams to get around amongst the concrete, carnival, and caipirinhas. We've since travelled to Quito, covered ice cream parlours in Havana, and sat down with the city mayor of Latin America's France. For Monocle, in Cayenne, I'm Lucinda Elliott. It's not as continental as it sounds. Cayenne of French Guiana is about as far from Europe and town planning as you can get. Even in transit, you can spot an urbanist story, with an ironic pandemic-driven stop-off in Madrid to talk about grounded planes. Having said bye for now to Brazil, with an ode to Rio as the coronavirus set in, I find myself here in Uruguay, taking a bit of a breather, in part thanks to the country's handling of COVID in this increasingly fraught region. Montevideo is allowing me to slow down, return to some in-person reporting, and take a good look behind doorways and round corners. A new cinema complex, a renovated former prison, my hunch, Andrew, is that this city will be just as story-filled. And for my personal favourite over these years, it has to be Georgina's Chateau Tooting, as a South London girl who enjoys a glass. One that I'll be raising to you and all the team to mark the 500th birthday. Feliz cumpleaños from Montevideo.
Well, and from Latin America, we swiftly move on to Asia. Here's Monocle's Hong Kong Bureau Chief, James Chambers.
It was about this time last year that Andrew asked a few of us Monocle correspondents to record love letters to our cities as they were coming out of COVID-19 lockdowns. For me, that episode of The Urbanist, number 449, really captured everything that is beautiful about the show. It is passionate about what makes cities work. It's positive about the future, and it never forgets that people should always be at the heart of all of this shimmering glass, cold concrete, and towering steel. And by it, I of course mean Andrew. A huge, skyscraper-sized congratulations, Mr. Tuck, on recording 500 wonderful shows. Although not much may have changed in the world since that episode 449, our cities continue to evolve, and I look forward to many, many more chats with you over the microphone about what makes Hong Kong really tick.
Well, good old James, because you know, what's amazing about that show when people wrote their letters to the city was I also wrote a letter. I found it a very emotional show. It was a very kind of tough time for cities around the world. And we just asked people to reflect on what was special about the place that they called home. And it's interesting that, in a way, James belongs to Hong Kong now. He's not just some outsider. It's got hold of him in a really interesting way, even in these difficult times for the city. So it was very moving hearing his words on that show. And I think also just hearing Lucinda as well, all these people, it's when you ask them to turn the gaze on the place that is home, it's quite extraordinary what people begin to see that's just feet in front of them. And when they articulate that for an audience around the world, it's something special and sometimes very moving too.
Well, let's now head over to a place where someone might be ready to defend why their city is actually not as boring as we've been made to sound like at the beginning of the show. Monocle's Alexei Korolyov in Vienna is here. Hello, Alexei.
Hey, hello. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there. I don't think we've ever said it's boring. We just said it has a mood, a certain mood. Well, Alexei, I think you've done many, many things on here. But I must say that I think you've become like the star turn on Tall Stories. Whenever I see a script where you're going to do that, or whenever I see a special report, your interest in Vienna and the depths that you've gone to have been pretty amazing. But we did send you even to go and see Vienna's only privately owned public toilet.
That is true. That is true. I mean, and Kimberly was talking there a minute ago about, you know, Vienna being moody and so on. And my encounters with the Viennese have been nothing short of, you know, it's been a festival, really. So, you know, I remember this one particular story. We were doing an episode on public lavatories, and I'd been told that all the public lavatories in Vienna are owned by the city, except for this one, a very famous one, that very remarkable. It's not there anymore, unfortunately, but it was located underneath the Vienna Opera House in an underpass. And I couldn't, for the life of me, find a phone number or email address for the owner. And I only had physical address of that person. So I just went over there and knocked on the door. And then this gentleman opened the door and he told me, I've been expecting you. What took you so long? But I essentially doorstepped him. So there was no way he could have known that I was coming. And it turned out in the conversation that he mistook me for a plumber because ironically, his toilet, his private toilet in his home had broken down that morning. And he was expecting a plumber, and he thought that I was a plumber, you know, and I had a microphone in one hand. I was wearing my headphones. So, you know, I think I looked like anything but a plumber. And then we had a very pleasant conversation. It was really, really funny. But then at the end, he stood up and he said, well, will you fix my toilet now, please?
We must tell our audience around the world, Alexei is not somebody who you'd imagine is going to fix your leak if he turned up on your door. But that's from 5 years ago. And I don't know, again, it's the fascination with your own city that you bring across to our audience, which has been so wonderful, the detail, the history, the knowledge. And again, you're somebody who has a little bit of a background as an outsider of the city. It's your new home. Do you think that has helped you with seeing Vienna afresh?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's been actually one of the main takeaways for me working on The Urbanist is that, you know, it just made me look as an outsider and just as a city dweller, it just made me look at things around me because I think we just spend so much time just, you know, walking around without really paying attention to the people, the objects, the buildings around us. And it's just made me look, you know, it made me look at toilets. And of course, yeah, I mean, the fact that I'm an outsider and, you know, I've been here many, many years, but I'm still an outsider in spirit. And that has opened many doors for me, but has also been sort of a hindrance. But it also gives me, I think, a unique perspective, I believe.
Well, thank you so much for all of your help. And maybe you could share your rates later on for dripping taps as well.
Will do.
Alexey Korolyov there in Vienna. Andrew, it's been, I don't know, around 7.5 years that I've been doing this show with you. And I just have one big question. It's, who the hell is Henry?
Henry. Oh, f***ing Henry. Oh, f***ing, I'm going to say it again. Shoot me, f***ing Henry. F***ing Henry. Oh, f***ing Henry, this is boring.
Perhaps we'll leave the answer for episode 1000.
Well, the terrible thing is that we had a radio producer called Henry who joined us long after I've been... As people are beginning to guess, there are many things that go wrong in putting the show together. And I'm very quick to curse myself for my failures. It was all fine until someone joined who was called Henry. And I think that the first time he was in studio trying to record something with me, not for The Urbanist, and he heard me saying that, he was like, oh my God, have I done something wrong here? Nothing to do with you. It's just a weird thing that has popped up in my brain. I think adopted from my parents along the way somewhere, although I don't believe they used the F word. I think, oh, Henry, my mother might have said, but anyway.
Well, I love that it took me putting together an episode to celebrate 500 of The Urbanist to finally discover the mystery behind it. And, you know, it's not only at Henry that you curse, sometimes it's at yourself too.
Sorry, I made a bit of a meal of that, but it's all in there somewhere if you dig deep. Well, you should be finished by midnight, David. It shouldn't take you too long. God, this is a disaster, David, this whole thing. Well, it gives David something to do. If I'd read it all in one seamless go, he'd be bored, so... I think I should stop doing this programme. Oh, God. Sorry, David, that's a lot. Sorry, Dave. Jesus. Sorry, David, quite a few takes, so... Sorry about that, a bit clunky. Sorry, David, this is just ridiculous. Don't cry, David. It's not that bad. There have been worse weeks. It's just a long script. What can I tell you? That wasn't too bad, actually.
Boom.
That was simple. It wasn't too bad. 6 out of 10. Not too scruffy, if I say so myself. I'm amazing. Oh, Hollywood, here I come. We do some quite good things, don't we? Carlos, no one's going to respect me ever again. This is the end of the show. I think 501 will have to be presented by someone else. Everyone thinks I'm like really together and polite and organised.
It's nice for people to see that you're human too, Andrew. And while you might not have your big break in Hollywood just yet, well, let's go a bit further north from Hollywood and head over to Edmonton, where Sheena Rossiter is joining us from. Hello, Sheena.
Hello. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Sheena. Well, that's a very nice surprise. You've been a big influence, especially in those early days with me and Michonne of what happened on Monocle 24. I've been given a list here of just a few of the things that you have done for The Urbanist. Wow, what a list.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went back looking through the paper trail of when I actually managed to start doing stuff for The Urbanist, and I went back all the way to episode 8. So Feeding the City was one of the first things that I started on. And I just remember going around to this little kind of 24-hour eatery in downtown Sao Paulo with my microphone in hand, just kind of accosting drunken Paulistanos as they were having their like midnight or 2 a.m. sandwich and asking them how it tasted. So, yeah, it was... It was a pretty wild ride, and I learned so much along the way with doing all the stuff in the Urbanist.
Now, you started in Latin America doing lots of reports from Sao Paulo, from Rio at the time of the Olympics. You're now as far away from that as you can imagine.
Oh, yes.
In Canada. Has it made you think about what you like about cities and what's important to you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was really special, especially getting to live in Rio de Janeiro between like 2013 and 2017, right when everything was like kind of sandwiched in with the 2014 FIFA World Cup and the 2016 Summer Olympic Games. Cause it was truly kind of like a city in transition. And it was a great place to see the rise of the city with all the transformations that were happening, but then like the abrupt fall swiftly after the Olympics ushered their way out of the city.
And now being back in Canada, Canada's had a, like everywhere, had a bit of an up and down ride with the pandemic. But where you live now, do you think that you've seen the best come out in your home now? Because I think many people are looking at their cities over the past year and thinking, yeah, it's been tough, but there's some good things that have come to the fore.
I mean, we're living in a moment where you definitely have to embrace the positive. So I guess what I do appreciate about where I live now is I live in a place where we do have a massive river valley system. It's much bigger than even Central Park in New York. So I do appreciate my daily COVID walks and not necessarily being surrounded by an intense amount of people every day like I was in Sao Paulo or Rio de Janeiro, which are two mega cities. So it is nice to have that step back and that breath of fresh air after so many years of intensity.
Well, Sheena, thank you again for all that you've done, because it's, again, when I look at the contributions you've made, it's extraordinary and a great commitment to telling good urbanist tales. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's stay in North America and in Canada, in fact, and head over to Toronto and hear from Monocle's Thomas Lewis.
I suppose one of the more hair-raising commissions I've received from you, Andrew, over the years was one for the magazine, but I think speaks to the idea of getting to know your home city, and I guess in my case, my adopted city of Toronto, in unusual and, yes, hair-raising ways. And the commission was to go and strap on my skates and learn how to rollerblade. I was wobbly, I was nervous, but thankfully, I emerged unscathed. And I'm not sure you'd believe me, Andrew, and I'm not sure many people listening to this would believe me either, if I said that my tutor did in fact say at the end of that class that I was a natural on skates. That has yet to bear itself out, given that my skates, I'm afraid to say, have been gathering dust in the month since that nerve-jangling lesson. But I think that story really spoke to me about lots of the pieces that we sent to the urbanist from Toronto and from Canada more broadly over the years, in that it really sparked this curiosity about peeking around corners, about looking down alleyways at the more surprising elements of city life. And I think for me personally, moving to a city that I didn't really know very well at all before coming here, the urbanist was this great way of getting to meet people involved in city life, from the mayor to those who are trying to reactivate the miles and miles of laneways that exist in Toronto, to even the people behind a massive fountain dedicated to the city's huge dog population in the city's East End. The urbanist has been full of surprises, and those surprises have been felt by me in really warm and wonderful ways, and getting to know a place for the first time. So here's to you, Andrew, and to the urbanist on 500 episodes, and raising a glass to you here from Toronto for the next 500.
Well, that's definitely something I would love to see, Thomas Lewis in roller skates. Thank you for that dispatch, and let's stay with some sort of micromobility. Here's Ed Stocker.
I have to say, there is one memory of Mr. Andrew Tuck that does stand out from The Urbanist and sort of reporting together. In the US, in Los Angeles, we went to this fair called Commotion together. We were walking around and testing out these newfangled types of mobility. And we decided to get on one of these electric scooter type things to test it out for the show.
Now, Andrew, I've been trying to get you to get on one of these e-scooters for the last couple of days. I think finally we're going to do it, right?
Well, we've been looking a little bit envious at some of the people as we've kind of gone around the city, kind of whizzing along with them, thinking it could be fun. I'm sort of petrified I'm going to go home with a cast on my leg, but then you can break yours as well. Maybe we could both be hobbling around next week. I think we should have a go.
All right, I can see this Lime e-scooter over here. Let's go try this one then.
You know, Monocle, let's just say, slightly cynical of all these new types of mobility, the clutter it leaves on streets. I've heard Andrew talk about that on the radio and possibly even write about that before. But I just want to say that when he actually got on one of these things, he was like an excited little schoolboy wishing round, racing me.
Ed, let me point out, I've never been on a skateboard.
Really? You have the skater look.
I've never been on a snowboard either. It doesn't start until you do what?
It doesn't start until you give it a kick.
What do you mean you have to kick it like a horse?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Wait.
Where? And you just push it.
Whoa! There's quite a lot of stability in something that's very.
You beat me there.
Thin.
Yeah.
Hey, you've never been able to keep up. I'm gonna come back. You carry on.
Are you gonna go for another spin? He's loving it.
That's my new. Oh.
I'm gonna have one more spin if I can too. I'm going to beat you this time. I don't think I've seen him ever so excited. So I think he was a bit of a convert, to be honest with you. And I'll say no more.
Oh, God, it's like going away with your grandparents, isn't it, him and me? It's like, we did a lot of very serious reporting and then we had some fun at the end of the day. So, yeah, some of this mobility is a bit kind of annoying. Even in my house, there's a place where they've now made a place where you leave the bikes at the end of the day and still everyone leaves them all over the street, tripping up blind people and things. But actually, when you're on them, of course, I see the fun of it. Just don't ride on the pavement too close to me, thank you.
Well, hearing that dispatch there from Ed and you guys reporting at Commotion in Los Angeles just made me think about so many of the conferences we've reported over the years. And I want to bring back David Michon, the original producer of this show, who has gone to so many different places with you, Andrew, over the years. My very first trip with you abroad was when we went to Bilbao, because for some reason, Michon had a holiday booked. So thank you very much, David, for being busy.
You're very welcome.
And allowing
You're
me
very welcome.
To...
The least I could do.
Thank you. So, yeah, I just wanted to bring you back and maybe talk a bit about, you know, some of those moments of reporting abroad for The Urbanist and why it is important to hear some of those stories, you know, have that first-hand account in place.
Well, I think it's important because me and Michon got to go to Brazil, for example, with Jack Phillips, and we had a very nice time.
You walked into a window.
I walked into a window.
That's how wild things got.
I don't think that I'd even got that wild at that point. But no, we had an amazing trip. We went to Bilbao. We did some really great reports. And that's the interesting thing. You get out in the world to see all these people who are kind of leading the charge. But yeah, and I meant it at the beginning, it was fascinating to see you ran with it. You've given advice to projects around the world, projects here in London, about how you make them a little bit more livable, what the brand value is of a place, how you make places. So I guess meeting all those people was a bit inspiring for you as well.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of those conferences, of course, you know, it's like they operate within a kind of bubble, as do, I guess, most kind of industries. So it was kind of nice to go in and find the stories that did feel like very human, that did seem to connect with like Monocle's USP, which was, you know, very much obviously about quality of life. And I think that was something that I kind of carried into work later, which was essentially the reverse of that, kind of speaking to people who work within a very narrow sphere and they're kind of not used to hearing what kind of conversations happen on the other side of things.
David, great having you join on today's show. And let's hear now from Guy Delaunay, our man in the Balkans.
When it comes to anniversary speeches, perhaps the best example is Charlie Watts summing up the Silver Jubilee of the Rolling Stones. As the immaculately dressed drummer pithily put it, it's been 5 years of hard work and 20 years of hanging around. That sounds very familiar to a foreign correspondent, only we tend to hang around in places and conditions which don't exactly lend themselves to immaculate dressing. Riots, refugee camps, natural disasters, that sort of thing. And I've noticed that Andrew notices. In one of our meetings, he gave my trusty Timberland jacket a withering up-and-down glare. But another time, Andrew enthused about my sodden raincoat, also Timberland, thus proving it's the style, not the label, that matters for our editor-in-chief. And I've certainly needed suitable outerwear for some of my reports for The Urbanist. I've sat shivering in abandoned industrial buildings reclaimed for cultural projects by Belgrade's urban guerrillas, the Ministry of Space. Checked in for a stay at Sarajevo's not-so-des res, the war hostel, and taken a trip in an unheated Yugo for a winter ride around the brutalist concrete of New Belgrade.
Hi, my name is Nina Ivanovic, and I am the operations manager for Yugo Tours.
This is because I'm driving slow, don't worry.
Then again, there have also been electric car jollies in Ljubljana, outdoor libraries in Sarajevo, and al fresco music in Serbia. Just as well Andrew couldn't see what I was wearing then.
lot of comments about people's wardrobes. I think we're getting onto a theme here.
He's obviously very sensitive about his wardrobe. I don't know if I had a withering look for a jacket, Mr. Dorling. But anyway, it also goes to show the power of a good correspondent, because Guy's one of those people, you know, he could probably fill the whole magazine with stories from wherever he is. He's just good at finding interesting stuff. And it's interesting also that you don't have to be in like one of the big megalopolises even to kind of like find great urban stories. He's always good at finding something very local, very real, and he puts together a really good way of telling story in audio.
Well, we're approaching the end of the show, and even though we've given you listeners a hint of what happens behind the scenes, we all love a bloopers reel, right?
That was too funny. Hold on. That was Kenji Hall being touched up in the back of a... Very serious programme. Robert Finger. Hello, this is Robert, my finger. What did you do to Robert, your finger? You'd never guess I got a hangover. So now let's get into the nits and grits. Let's get into the nits and grits. I don't sound like too much of a pillock, do I, when Senna's like... I don't mind sounding like a pillock if I am, but...
I want to dance with somebody.
Oh, and a bit more. God, we're all camp there. Thank you for listening, Sati lovers. Sati lovers. Oh, that's you too. And to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, well, here's Betty Wright with Clean Up Woman. Thank you for listening, city lovers. That's not a very good song, is it? And to play you out, sorry, and to, oh dear, and to play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's Betty Wright with Clean Up. That is pretty bad. It makes you realise, I think we should announce my retirement rather than anything else. My God, well, thank you, guys. What an amazing run around the world, an amazing lineup of topics and guests. And a real realisation that I needed to go back to kind of radio school and start learning how to read a script. But we should also say thanks to the people who listen, hey, because no messing around. It's been amazing. And we've met some extraordinary people come through here, and we've had some funny times, and we've had some moving times. So it's been great. But what's also great is just the feedback you get from people and the response when you go out into the world. And we've done lots of live things. And so to David and Colossa, thank you very much. And thank you to everybody you can bear listening to this show, especially after this week. Please don't give in. It's going to be much more polished next week. I'm going to finally know what to do and what I want to say.
Well, it wouldn't be a celebration if we didn't have a proper toast. So let's get for it.
There may be a hole in the studio roof now because David very kindly came in with a bottle of fizz, which has kind of taken out part of the ceiling.
I thought that had set long enough. Clearly not. Oh, my God.
And well, there we go. Mike 2 is out of commission.
You got drenched in this.
Well, here we go. As I have a word with my colleagues and also a drink, that's all for this very special edition of The Urbanist. It was produced by Colotta Ribello and David Stevens, of course, and David also edited the show, but you know that by now. And to play you out of this week's episode, a throwback to the very first song that we ever played at the end of The Urbanist. Here's St Etienne with Side Streets. And here's to the next decade. Thank you for listening, city lovers.
Cheers, cheers, Andrew.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Seen us home at certain times of the evening. It's like an echo song.